on a podcast called Dub Jellyson Podcast.
Hey, you know how it is, though. Hey,
when I was like, this is kind of real. Like, holy shit.
Hey, you know, like, all right, I was one of the chosen ones.
Like, that's a career night. Like,
never have you failed if you played it right.
And I'm just blessed to.
Thought it was my time to shine.
I don't remember that. That's crazy.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to episode 176 of the Dub Jellyson Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, one of the newest members of the revamped XFL, Mr. Drew Plitt. Drew, how are you?
I'm great. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Like I mentioned, you're one of the newest members of the XFL now. What have things been like for you over these last few weeks since you guys got drafted?
Yeah, since, you know, getting drafted, just trying to figure out playbook wise what's going on, getting things together. Obviously, when the new league starts up, it's going to be a little bit chaotic, but they've done a good job of sending us stuff, overloading or being too chaotic with everything as it comes in, the information wise
now, how do you guys view this, or you yourself view this as an opportunity within the XFL? Obviously, when you play football, everybody's dream is to make it to the NFL. You have to sit back and be like, all right, this is the reality. I'm not to that point yet. This is the opportunity that I need to take.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, like you said, everybody wants to play in the NFL. The great thing about the XFL, the USFL, all these other leagues, is it gives us a chance to keep playing. You know I can play at that level. I was in camp with the guys, and theoretically the only thing that kept me out was that the coaches knew the other quarterbacks more than they knew me. Which is fine. I mean, that's part of the business, is knowing people more than is, a lot of times just being able to play if you're a backup. So, for me, it gives me a chance to keep playing. And it gives me a chance to, you know, wait till next year. You know, maybe something happens, injury happens next year or something like that. I can keep playing, doing all that. And with, you know, the NFL, there's no, like, there hasn't been like a sub league, kind of like the G League or the minors for baseball or basketball. Or even hockey, the same thing. There's smaller leagues that, you know, feed into the professional team. I think that could be used here with the XFL is an off season. I think the timing of the XFL is great, where season of the NFL is over. We get to play those 10 weeks. There are 10 weeks, and we still have a chance to go to OTAs, have a summer of recovery, and then go into camp. So really just that opportunity to be able to keep playing, for another shot in the NFL, you know, next year.
That would be wild if they could come together and be like, all right, you guys are going to feed into the NFL. That'd be
right. Wild. Right. I mean, like, I think it'd be a, you know, it's probably years down the line, but I think it'd be a great program to have. Just, hey, we need to develop some guys. And I think that's what we're looking at as is a developmental league. We need to, you know, develop our skills and even with coaches, maybe they get a chance to go there and work with guys that, you know, they don't always get to work with.
Yeah. And I mean, you guys got The Rock leading.
Yeah. Yeah.
That group.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are helping us too with the, you know, The Rock being the face of it. It helps us too with exposure on ESPN, FX, Disney, all of it. Like, I think it's going to be great.
Dude, one thing that I was thinking about, I was like, Bezos needs to get in with the XFL.
Yeah. I mean,
all his, like, his,
the
He's
bigger names
so
you
much,
can get in it, the bigger it's gonna, bigger it's gonna be. And I don't think they want to be a competition like the XFL originally was. It's more of a, hey, let's make it a developmental league and help these guys who are on that, you know, bubble.
Yeah,
I mean, look at Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up.
The second, really, they called the XFL 2.0 was the 2020 version. So we're 3.0 now, but you know, guys are playing because of it.
Yeah, do you kind of draw inspiration from guys like Taylor Heinicke or even PJ Walker, who started, I believe he started in the XFL, and now he's also gotten an opportunity with the Panthers this year.
A little bit of inspiration. I think it's more just validation that this league works. That, you know, as long as you keep playing, I think that's a big part of the NFL too. Is you got to keep your name relevant. If you get more than a year or two out of, you know, relevancy, it's you know, the career is kind of by the wayside.
Yeah, and that's one of the weird things, because like you mentioned earlier with the NFL or the NBA, excuse me, the MLB, all those different things, you can go play in other, you can go play in other countries, especially in basketball. You can go play in Japan for a year, come back, maybe make the G League or go to the or break camp with the team, and then voila, you're right there.
Yeah, you're playing again. Yeah, it is pretty interesting. You know, the NFL, I think, is a little bit, you know, more cutthroat and old school right now. So, I mean, it's part of the, and that's the thing, being a football player, you know, the business, and everybody thinks they can play, and it's just about proving it.
Yeah, but they also have the European League, I believe.
Yeah.
I had their MVP on the podcast probably a year ago now, Jacob Sullivan. And, I mean, he can ball. He's a quarterback.
Yeah.
He can ball, and they got a guy that – I'm a Purdue guy. They got Anthony Mahungu, who played for the Boilermakers back in 2017 and had a phenomenal year, was in camp with the Eagles. There's talent out there. It's just a matter of NFL teams finding them and them getting them getting that platform to really be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. And then with the thing with football too is there's only so many. It's so physical. There's only so many reps. You have in a given day you'll get, I don't know, say anywhere from 35 to 45 team reps, and you got to spread that out amongst, you know, how many players. Like, whereas the NBA, you can get in there and you can show that you can shoot and play for 2 hours straight, whereas you get 15 minutes in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like NFL fans really rally around some of those guys that have those types of stories where they're underdogs and they have this weird winding road to the league. People love Taylor Heinicke. I don't know anybody who doesn't like him.
I agree with you for sure.
You might have to be putting some dips in and chugging some brews.
Chugging some beers or something like that.
Yeah, the XFL is going to be fun to watch, so I'm excited for it. There's quite a few Purdue guys. I don't know. How many Ball State guys are there? Do you know?
I think we have three right now. A corner and a linebacker that are both playing as well.
Now, how much did you watch back in their first return in 2020?
Honestly, I mean, I was tuned in. You know, I think they played 5 weeks. Watched at least three of the five. You know, obviously it was you forget about it the first year just because you're not used to it. But I think as years go on, it's going to be a bigger thing.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I just think it's going to keep growing.
Yeah, I do too. And I think what they're doing is great with, you know, the USFL didn't play their – they only played their games in Birmingham, which is, you know, tough to build a fan base in those other places. But thus is the XFL. Like, they're flying us to, you know, D.C. We'll be playing in D.C. We'll be playing in Vegas. You know, that stuff like that will build a fan base. And you can – and not even just – even if it's just people showing up because they don't have anything else to do on the weekend. Like, well, I'll take that.
They needed to put an indie team. So I wanted to go watch. I don't know if I'll be able to go watch any games. I think the closest one to here is St. Louis.
St. Louis, maybe? I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Then
I think they're trying to stay out of the northern states with it being the winter, you know, for now, unless they get some, like the St. Louis team will be playing the old, you know, Astrodome or the old Rams Arena or stadium. So it's pretty cool though.
But then also, forgive me, I didn't do that much research. I don't know who your coach is, but they have some big name coaches.
Yeah. Bob Stoops is my head coach. So
that's nice.
I mean, there's some big name coaches, guys that have been around the league. You know, quarterback coach is Chuck Long, who played in the league for a little bit. John Hayes, who played in the league, coached for 17 years with the Bengals. Like, a lot of guys that know people that have been in the league. So I think they're doing it right.
What have your conversations been like with Coach Stoops in particular?
Yeah, I met him out at the draft. It was very brief. You know, obviously he's pretty busy with getting things set up. He was around the first time with the Arlington team. So I think he's got a little bit more wherewithal with everything that's going on. But like I said, it's been brief. You know, we were busy doing a lot of media stuff and him getting ready for the draft and So I'm excited to get out there in January and really pick his brain, Coach John Hayes and Chuck Long, just kind of learn from them and better myself.
Now, what about your teammates? How much have you talked to them? Because a former member of the – or guest on the podcast, Jesus. Former guest on the podcast, Jackson Anthrop, will be one of your receivers this year. And,
Yeah, I've talked to Jackson. You know, a lot, most of the receivers I've reached out to or they've reached out to me. So we've been talking a little bit. The playbook is still in the works. So, you know, there's – not much to talk about other than getting to know each other, but and I've met a few guys on Instagram or talked to them on text, and so it's been good. Just kind of in that phase of waiting to figure out what we can and can't do.
Mm-hmm. And I know you touched on it a little bit earlier, but your experience with the Bengals in training camp and preseason, how valuable was that for you?
Sorry, you cut out there. You want to ask that question again?
Yeah, sorry about that. You talked a little bit earlier about your training camp experience and preseason experience with the Bengals. How valuable was that for you?
It was great. One, getting to understand like an NFL system, you know, how quickly it moves, the playbook, you know, how, and like talking to other quarterbacks, you know. I was there with Jake Browning, Brandon Allen, obviously Joe, who was coming back from his appendicitis. But just learning, like, you know, how similar playbooks were amongst the league. So when you go into another place, like, how quickly you can pick it up. But I think it's just, like I said, it's a lot of validation that I went through, too, that knowing I could play at that level. And getting in that first game, the last series, being able to make some throws, score touchdown, do all that. So just a lot of validation and confidence building that I had through that entire experience.
And what was like, I don't know how much you guys overlapped in terms of actually practicing with the appendicitis that Joe was going through, like you said, but just seeing him work and seeing him be a pro maybe in meeting rooms or whatever, what was that like?
Yeah. I mean, I think on the field, what stands out about him is he's real technical, sees things a little bit differently. And really analytically. So he'll go through it. And when we go walkthroughs, you know, you can see him making reads, making points, doing stuff like that, that, you know, kind of gets forgotten and kind of gets lost when you just go through it every day. But I think he really stays on top of it, which is why he performs so well. He's very smart. You can see all the adjustments he makes on Sundays. It carries over. So I think just going into walkthroughs and seeing how analytical he is, that's kind of what stood out to me. You know, he's a great player. He's got his weaknesses, got his strengths. He's great and never like did things that everybody sees on Sundays. And I think just that part of the walkthrough analytically analyzing the game was kind of big to me.
He's one of the most polarizing guys in the league. Like his aura and his and just the way he enters a room and the whole Joe Shiesty and all that stuff is pretty funny. Yeah. Coming from a kid that a year before that LSU year where he blew up.
It was
funny being talked about.
Right. I mean, he was kind of in my shoes the year before. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think it all just kind of came together for him. So it's awesome to see too, you know. Great guy that I could reach out to and ask him questions anytime if I needed to, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about an NFL locker room is guys really take care of the younger guys coming in and they're always there. I talked to one guy who he played like half a year with Chris Paul, and he said he could still call Chris Paul right now. And that was
I mean, I think when you get to that level, kind of everybody understands, you know, how difficult it is. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then, you know, you don't really typically talk to those. You don't make a relationship with them, but the people you build a relationship, I mean, like, you know, you're sitting there spending every day, breakfast, lunch and dinner, having it at the facility. You get to know people and you kind of stop seeing them like as a first round or second round draft pick. You just like, they're teammates. They're here to work. I'm here to work. Everybody's fighting for a spot. You know, it's, when you enter the field, though, it's kind of like it's a little cutthroat where, you know, you're going for somebody else's job. But when it's off the field, I mean, it's pretty relaxed and nice, and everybody helps each other out.
Now, was it kind of bittersweet to obviously not make the team and then kind of start back from zero, come back to where you started?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, tough. Great thing about the Bengals, they were up front with me the whole time. They were like, hey, we're, you know, you're here while Joe's out. When Joe came back, they cut me. They kind of told me that the whole time, so I was expecting it. It was a little tough, but, you know, I was glad I got that opportunity because it's, you know, giving me this opportunity in the XFL. And, you know, everything about it is just another opportunity to get better and keep playing as long as I can. Stay away from a real day job as long as I can.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Yeah. At all. Do you think that you could go right into a day job?
No. No, I mean, my fiance, she's like, I hope you never have to work behind a desk because you'll be miserable. And I was like, yeah, I definitely would be.
I don't know how some of those guys do it. Like, the ball stops bouncing, whatever.
Yeah,
I want to go back to your time at Ball State because obviously that's where I first saw you play.
Mm-hmm.
How much fun is it playing in the MAC conference down in Muncie?
Fun is I don't know if I'd use the word fun.
Oh no.
Playing those Tuesday and Wednesday nights, man, it's you gotta be built for it because you know you bust right up the day before. You got to sit around all day, and typically like Saturdays you play a night game is great because there's football on all day, right? Mm. On a Tuesday and Wednesday, when you're sitting there at 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and you're just kind of waiting for meetings and the bus to leave, like there's nothing on TV. Like you're just kind of sitting there scrolling your phone.
You can watch Stephen A.
Yeah. I mean, you put it on Sports Center, but like, there's not games going on. So like, that's the tough part about it. It's like, you kind of just sit there in a hotel room for like hours just waiting. And you play your game, then you leave, you know, you get out earliest 11 o'clock on the bus, you bus ride back, you get in at 4 a.m. You got to be up at 8 just to go to class or treatment or whatever it is. So like, the schedules are tough. And there's the fans, there's, you know, what, maybe 4,000, if that. I think there's one time we played in Muncie when we weren't very good. We had probably 500 people, including the band there.
Wow.
So, I mean, like I said, you got to be built for it. So I don't know if fun's the word, but it's great exposure.
I love Tuesday Night Action. I love it so much.
Yeah. I mean, everybody loves it because they like, and I like it for that reason. Everybody, you know, gets to watch. All my buddies are, you know, sitting there drinking with their fraternity brothers or college roommates, and they're watching me and bet, you know, doing whatever, betting on me and this, that, and the other. So it's pretty funny.
I mean, what was that 2020 season like? Taking back a few years, all the success you guys had on top of COVID stuff, and how did that season play out for you?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty awesome. First game was tough, but you know, we just rode, you know, got on a winning streak, got hot, and just rode that wave. It was awesome. A little bittersweet because, you know, we played in Detroit for the MAC championship, and Michigan at the time wasn't allowing any fans. So the stadium was empty. No, you know, no family could come and watch. No family could come out to Arizona to watch. That part was tough. Just, you know, wishing they got to experience that as much as I did. But they were at home watching together. And it's pretty funny. We played Central Michigan at Central that year. And they were coming out of the tunnel, and they're like, Michigan fan, Central Michigan fans, get on your feet. And I was like, everybody was like, there's nobody in, like, nobody's allowed to be in the stands. Who's getting on their feet? Like, you don't even have to say that part. So it was pretty interesting, but you know, we just rode a high. It was awesome. You know, got on that streak and just, you know, kept going.
Now bringing that MAC championship home, back to Muncie, what was that like for you?
That was pretty cool. You know, I don't think I slept that night. That was kind of, that's our like national title. For the MAC conference, you win that. It's kind of like, you know, at our level, it's kind of as big as we'll be able to get, just unless you go to a, you know, a New Year's Six and win. But But winning that MAC conference, it's such a tough conference too. Every year, it's a different teams in the championship. The West, you know, it comes down basically the last two games every year. There's never a team that's just undefeated. So it's, you know, like I said, it's a lot of fun in that aspect. You always have a chance to be heading to Detroit to play in that game.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously we know smaller schools aren't playing for a spot in the college football playoff and things like that. But to you, what makes playing at a smaller school like a Ball State, like a Kent State, Michigan, et cetera, what makes that so special?
I think it gives you a little chip, you know, moving forward. Like, you know, you play Division One, it's great. Everybody kind of like, they don't scoff at it, but you say it and they're like, oh, you know, a lot of people I say I played at Ball State, like, oh, that's in Ohio, right? And I'm like, no, it's in Indiana, you know, small town, just about an hour northeast of Indianapolis. But, you know, it gives you a little sense of pride in that aspect too. It gives you chip and pride in where you went to school, try to make a name for it, try to make it, you know, as much as you can with that experience.
Now, do you think that that's going to be going away here soon? I mean, we've kind of already seen it with a lot of guys transferring out of those MAC schools and Conference USA and wherever. Do you think that smaller schools like that are going to kind of lose that that sense of camaraderie that they have?
I think if any, I don't think so at that level. I think if it's going to happen, it's going to be across the board. I mean, you look at the transfer portal right now, it's hectic, it's chaotic, it's just like, and the thing is, you just put your name in and it doesn't have your position where you went to school. It's just like a name. So I think that that's just going to be across the board, that you'll lose a little bit of that. But also at the same time, when you transfer, if you're a team that's got some real leadership, like, you'll accept anybody that comes in. You know, everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to play and win. So if that's your ultimate goal, then you shouldn't have any problem building some camaraderie. You know, we had plenty of transfers come in that we, you know, they're like brothers. So, I think it'll be fine. I think college football is at an interesting place with transfer portal and the realignment of conferences, but I think it'll return to normal.
Yeah. What do you think of a guy like Carson Steele? I know you guys played together. He's one of my favorite guys to watch in the country. Yeah. And I'm hoping he comes on up to West Lafayette. Him and Maccabee would be dirty together. But what do you think about him transferring and seeking greener pastures? Because, I mean, he's top five in the country in, like, touchdowns, rushing yards, all these stats, and he decides to jump ship and pursue a new team.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with it, personally. Like, it, you know, when you get to this level – everybody wants to put like you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. When, you know, like, you got to think of it like a business. Think of it like the NFL at this point. Like, he has a chance to go somewhere. And if he plays really well, he could get, you know, paid. He could get a better chance at, or better look at the NFL, stuff like that. Like, he's done a great job at Ball State. You know, he's a great player. I like Carson a lot. You know, he's played with him for a year and great player, really smart. I think he'll do well wherever he goes, but I think, you know, you got to do what's best for you when it comes down to it, because at the end of the day, it's a business. You know, coaches will be the first ones to say, oh, you shouldn't be doing that, but they'll jump ship as soon as a better offer comes in, right? I mean, he's at a point where his stock is super high. He can get a better chance at going somewhere, playing, making some money, going to the NFL. I think that's the positive side of the transfer portal is, you know, he can make a jump up because he's capable of, and he's proven it.
Yeah. And I mean, it sucks because I feel like those smaller schools, like we've kind of talked about, all their studs are going to get plucked because
they are going to get plucked. I think, but you always need, like, guys from bigger schools are going to need somewhere to play too. And you know what I mean? Like, that they may be just as good, but they're not getting that opportunity at some of the schools. So I think, like, it's going to be a balancing act. I think it's just going to, you're going to have a little bit more movement year in and year out from guys.
Yeah. It's great. Transfer portal's going insane. Cause there was like a thousand guys in there in like 2 days.
Yeah, within the first 2 days of the end of the season. Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's
insane. Like all these guys, and then I saw a stat that said it was somewhere in like the 40% range that actually find a home. So yeah. That means the rest of them are just like kind of floating out there. They don't really know.
They're just kind of either going to a, you know, FCS or something. Because like you're competing with, you know, high school kids that are coming out as well. And they've already got scholarships because they were recruited a whole year before. So interesting spot, that's for sure. But I think it'll work itself out and everything will be fine.
Yeah, but I think someone like a Carson is a prime candidate for that. And
no, I think he's going to do well in the transfer portal. He's got a lot of, you know, what we call it, clout. So, you know, a lot of stock, a lot of clout, and you know he'll be able to carry that.
I think if he made it to the NFL, that's one of the best stories that I've seen, especially out of Indiana.
Yeah,
coming out only having a handful of offers, he picked between Ball State, a scholarship from Ball State, or a walk-on spot from Purdue and IU, I believe, and then just broke onto the scene and
kept doing what he was doing in high school.
He's also an interesting character. I've never talked to him, but at least from the outside, like he's got that damn pet snake,
pet alligator, dude. Crocky J,
fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's
pretty. That's insane. I'm about. Did you ever meet him?
I never met Crocky J, but he showed his pictures.
I would have brought, if I was him, I would have brought him into the facility or something one day.
I think he said he's like 6 feet long now, so they don't take him out much, but he's basically got a room he's got a room for himself, and he said they'll put him on a leash like when he was like young. I don't even know what you call a young croc.
Uh-huh.
But he was, when he was small, they'd put him on a leash and walk him around the neighborhood. So
that's why I love it. But like I said before we started, I'm gonna have to wrap this thing up here shortly. So
you're good, no worries.
I really appreciate you coming on, taking the time to do this. My apologies for all the issues that we had.
It's all good, no worries.
Leading up to this that the audience isn't privy to, but best of luck in the XFL, man.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. I'm gonna be tuning in every week, and hopefully you can have a lot of success there.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.